Welcome back to another edition of the Off the Crossbar podcast here on ILIndoor.com, courtesy of Inside Lacrosse. My name is Teddy Jenner, your host as always, and it's week four of the general manager's talks here as we go around the league. And joining us is a Burnaby, BC native, multiple Man Cup winner, National Lacrosse League championship winner, and the general manager of the Colorado Mammoth. He is Steve Govett. Govey, how are you?
I'm well. No Man Cups, Teddy.
Oh, I was just trying to sell you so hard.
I played for Burnaby. Not only that, I was in Burnaby when, you know, the drought between the great teams of the late 70s, early 80s, and then, you know, the juggernaut that was Burnaby Junior Lacrosse in the 90s.
Right.
I was right in the middle of that.
Oh, you poor bastard.
With Gary and Paul and Tommy and all the other guys that I had to play against, so. Yeah.
You grew up in a bad time to be a Burnaby Laker. It was a bad time to be a Burnaby Laker.
It was. No Canadian hardware whatsoever.
No. But you played with Dallas back in the day, right?
I did. I had a great opportunity. Dallas won me a lot of NLL championships. So.
That's too. Yeah. How are you? How's things in Colorado?
Things are good in Colorado. You know, just battling through... you know, another challenging season of trying to get wins and losses in a great league.
It's been an up and down season for you guys so far, and it's been that way for the past couple years as well. But now you guys are kind of solidified in your goaltending ranks. Have you been waiting for this moment since G. Nash left?
No question. I think that's exactly what we've been, you know, waiting for or hoping for, or, you know, you try a lot of different strategies, and at the end of the day, you know, we had to focus our attention on a young kid that we've decided is going to be the future goaltending, you know, for this franchise, and he's embraced that, and, you know, we tagged him with that last draft, and gave him the opportunity to develop a little bit, and you know, Rome's not built overnight from a goaltending perspective, but it's so vitally important in this league, and the goaltending is you know, the number one ingredient for wins and losses. And it's funny because I've had this conversation with a number of guys, Junior, as early as the other day in my office, and we sat back and we said, you know, John Grant can go out and score, you know, 25% of his shots. And, you know, then that's going to help us win games. But the bottom line is, if we get 80%, 75%, let's say 77% from our goaltender, just one more percent, two more saves, and we're going to win more games. Yeah. And we went back and we've studied kind of all the wins and losses over the course of the last of this season and the eight we've had, and you know, we'd be 7-4 right now if we just had 75% save percentage.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we're hopeful that Ty is embracing that and understanding it, and certainly played great on Saturday night against an extremely good Calgary team, and they deserve a ton of credit for what they've built there. And you know, they're great. They're a fantastic team, and obviously Curtis Dixon wasn't satisfied with what was going on in that game and decided he was going to show up in the last 5 minutes of the game and change the face of it. But that's the nature of the National Lacrosse League.
Yeah, as he's been known to do. Why do you think it is that the goaltender is sort of the longest learning curve of young players coming into the National Lacrosse League? We don't see too many guys that have a season like Tyler Richards did back in 2010, where they come in and they're automatically and instantly one of the best goaltenders in the game. Why is it that it's such a slow developing position?
Well, partly because we only practice once a week.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's difficult to develop goaltending when you practice once a week. I mean, hey, let's face it. The reason Tyler Richards was as good as he was in the year that he was good in San Jose is because he was a practice squad goaltender in San Jose, and those guys went out and shot on him, you know, 700 balls a day when he was a practice squad goaltender living in San Jose with, you know, 10 or 12 other guys that were living down there. And they went out every day and they shot on him legally.
Yeah.
And he was able to develop. But, you know, I think that's the biggest thing. I mean, Ty Belanger living down here now is, you know, out there with 4 and 5 and 6 guys every other day or every day at the rink getting balls shot on him. You wonder why the kid's playing well? That's the biggest reason.
Yeah. How excited was he when he was finally healthy and he was now given the keys to be the number one goaltender for you guys?
I think he's pretty excited. You know, he's a pretty level-headed kid, low-key. I think he takes it all in stride. He's a really fun kid to be around, and he's unique and exciting. And I'm loving watching this because it's just seeing, you know, kind of the from the draft and from, you know, the germination of the plan to get this young kid in here and to, you know, kind of put the chips in the basket.
Mm-hmm.
and to see him develop. And it's only been, you know, 4 games, so let's not anoint him the next Patrick Waugh.
Yeah.
But you know what? He's a pretty special kid, and we're pretty excited to have him.
You guys have done quite well in the drafts the past few years. Is that all you, or you have a lot of people in good positions helping you scout some of these young picks that you guys have found?
You know, like Bob Hamley, it's by no means is it all me. It's very little of it is me. I've had the opportunity to be that guy for a long time, and as I've been moving on within the Kroenke Sports organization to do other things and to grow up in the sports world, I've had the great opportunity to lean on good people like Bob Hamley and Sean Ferris, who do a great job on the draft for the mm-hmm. for the Mammoth, and kind of relinquishing a little bit of that stranglehold that I've had on it for years and allowing some people who are extremely good at what they do. And ultimately, I'm the guy that gets to say yes, but mm-hmm. I get to work with some really, really good people who are very dedicated to this game and very dedicated to the growth of the Mammoth organization as a winner. And I'm proud to say that I get to work with these guys.
You wear a few hats with the Mammoth. You're president, general manager, and governor. Are you slowly stepping away from any of those roles, or are you still heavily involved?
You know what? My general manager role here with the team is one of that's administrative. I make sure the guys are signed and mm-hmm. sealed. And I still have a little bit to do with the lacrosse side because, you know, I just can't find myself getting away from it, just because I love it so much and
yeah.
I've been around it so long, and it's almost, it's just hard to cut that tie. I mean, not that I'm being asked to cut the tie, but relinquishing a little bit of control and allowing other people to do, you know, what they need to do to be successful. And so that's happening. I have a new role with Kroenke Sports as a vice president of new business development for Kroenke Sports. And that's taking up a little bit of my time.
Nice.
The first priority is making sure that we have a winning product here in the Mammoth. You know, my role as the chairman of the Board of Governors with the National Lacrosse League is taking up some time
mm-hmm.
and focusing attention on trying to get the NLL moving into a direction that is going to, you know, allow us to be around for the long haul. And
yeah.
I take great pride in that and working with George Daniel on a regular basis and trying to help him provide a great product in the NLL and make it a viable business opportunity.
You guys had the Board of Governors meeting in your backyard a couple weeks ago. From your perspective as sort of the chair of that board, how did you feel it went?
You know, it's a good group of guys, very dedicated to the sport, and many of them, you know, are really putting their pocketbook behind the sport, and they're funding a significant amount of losses in the National Lacrosse League. And I marvel every day at the opportunity that I get to spend with these guys that have dedicated their pocketbook to the game and love it and love the sport and want to see it grow. And you know, we're not perfect by any means. We make mistakes. We make the decisions. It's almost like being a GM. You make the decisions at the time that you make them with the information that you have at the time. And we're attempting to be better and do better and grow up as a sport and as a league. And I'm proud of the steps that we're taking. And I think we've got some really solid people in the room.
What's the biggest hurdle for the National Lacrosse League?
Wow. I think there's a few, obviously. We need to develop more non-endemic sponsors and people that are not just the Reeboks and mm-hmm. the manufacturers in this industry.
Yeah.
We love those guys. They're fantastic. They're the ones keeping us afloat and supporting us. But the bottom line is we need to get outside that box, and we need to develop non-endemic sponsors, and we need to grow up and get more people involved in the game. We need to grow at a grassroots level. We need more kids playing the game of indoor lacrosse in the U.S., and
mm-hmm.
I think that is evidencing itself in a number of things that are happening in Washington and Minnesota and Colorado, and you know, so there's really exciting stuff going on there. You know, I think we have to solidify a television contract that allows us to be seen on you know, more on a wider and larger scale. We have to create critical mass. We have to get to the point where we're taking this game to the masses and people start to understand that this is not just a regional sport in the Northeast and, you know, a yuppie sport, so to speak. We have to take it to the next level.
What's going to take for that, you know, big TV contract to come into place? Is it going to be more teams? Is it going to be, you know, getting the sponsors? Because it's kind of a double-edged sword. You can't get the big sponsor without a TV contract, and you can't get a TV contract without the big sponsors. What's it going to take?
Yeah, I mean... you've hit the nail on the head. You're in a bit of a catch-22 situation.
Yeah.
And, you know, while I don't think it's impossible, I do think that, you know, there's some really good people out there that are thinking out of the box, whether they're in the National Lacrosse League or they're in the MLL or, you know, talking about pro lacrosse and trying to figure out how we, you know, bridge the gap to get this game, you know, moving to the next level. And what's it going to take? I don't know the answer. It's going to take money is what it's going to take.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the bottom line. That's how these shows that you guys work on, that's how they work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can't live on volunteers forever, right? And the National Lacrosse League needs to generate more revenue. And whether it's ticket sales, whether it's sponsorship dollars, whether it's it doesn't matter where it comes from. We just need to start creating a larger awareness at the sponsorship level, and I think that's going to create those television contracts. That's going to create, you know, bigger and better things for the NLL.
You work under the Kroenke Sports umbrella, which by Sports Illustrated standards is the most powerful owner in all of sports, Stan Kroenke. What's it like working in an organization that is just so massive in the sports realm?
Well, you know, it has its positives and it has its negatives.
Yeah,
it's
true.
Like any other
yeah.
organization. You know, when you have something that big and an owner that is focused on so many different things, sometimes, you know, lacrosse becomes less of a priority, although it's a focus and something that we take great pride in here and something that, you know, this organization has always done well since its inception in 02
mm-hmm.
and playing in 03. And you know, so the great thing about it is being able to take advantage of some amazing people that focus their attention on sports every day and, you know, and knowing and understanding a marketplace that is ripe to be sold to and being able to launch the sport that we launch. That we did launch 10 years ago, you know, with the massive machine that we were able to put behind it. So, you know, it has its ups and downs. It's a lot of fun when you want to go to a hockey game and a basketball game and a soccer game and a lacrosse game all in you know, span of 48 hours.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's exciting. It's a very cool place to work. There's some great people here, and I think great people that have the best interests of lacrosse at heart.
Why did Colorado work so well? Like from day one, as soon as you guys came to town, you guys were the model franchise. What was it?
Well, I think it had a lot to do with the quality of the GM, but no, I'm kidding. It had nothing to do with me. You know, it was I've said this a number of times, and people say how and why, and you know what it really came down to was a confluence of a number of different. Major contributing factors. One was, you know, a really good team in the Washington Power, Gary Gate, who, you know, was an icon in this sport, and a lot of people here in Denver knew who he was from
mm-hmm.
his participation in the Vail tournament and stuff like that, and people knew who he was. So that was part of it. It was the launching at the right time with the Avalanche being sold out. You couldn't get into the building to do anything other than, you know, see a lacrosse game. And we were able to create a lot of people that, again, non-endemic, people that weren't associated with lacrosse wanted to come and see this product. And so once we got them in, we hooked them, you know, and we were able to use the leverage of the Avs and the Nuggets and the Kroenke Sports machine, as I said before, and lay that out there. But you know what? This was a good lacrosse town with DU, you know, here and growing and the game was growing and I think it was just the right time and we were able to put a great product on the field, you know, winning product, but also we entertained a lot of people. And I think ultimately, you know, where does the circus stop? and the game begin,
mm-hmm.
I don't know that I'll ever find out,
yeah.
because I'm not sure that we're willing to give up on any of the things that we do to see exactly what works and what doesn't.
Yeah. Well, I know, as having played there many times, you know, just being out there on the floor when the motorbikes come out and Willie B gets the crowd going, and the whole atmosphere of playing there makes it amazing. I can only imagine what it's like as a fan. Now, I remember probably the greatest moment of my NLL career playing in that barn was the first game that Gator scored 6 and everyone took their socks off. Did you have any idea that that would start a lacrosse revolution?
You know, it's kind of fun, and I'll tell the story, because it actually, a girl working for us at the time, she was working our game entertainment, and she said, you know, hockey has a hat trick. What is it in lacrosse?
Yeah.
And like, we just said it's a hat trick, you know, because of our steep, you know, lacrosse roots.
Mm-hmm.
And so there really wasn't anything. And she said, well, what if you score 6 goals? What happens if you score 6? And I said, oh, there's really nothing. I mean, I laughed. My joke was, why don't we make it a bra trick? And all these women can pull their bras out of their shirts like they do, that no guy can actually figure out how they do it.
Yeah.
And you know, they can all throw them on the turf. And that didn't go over very well. But
probably not.
The bra trick, that was mine. But
and if anywhere it could work, it would probably be Colorado, because you guys already have the girls in bikinis in the hot tub. So it would only be, you know, it seemed like it would be a fit.
Well, yeah, but it wasn't flying. Nobody wanted to make
that. That wasn't
so
going to happen.
No. She goes, well, what about a sock trick? I go, wait, you know, people throwing their smelly, stinky socks out on the floor? I go, that'll never work. And so she laid it up, and Willie B. bought into it. And lo and behold, this is, you know, a couple of years in. Like, this wasn't right away.
Yeah.
You know, lo and behold, Gary gets it. I think it was 2005.
Yeah.
And you know, everybody took their socks off.
Yeah, I know.
And threw them on the and so now you actually to see it in other buildings, and know and understand where
what the hell's going on,
how it developed, and yeah. And you know, it's just a really fun and unique Denver thing, and we have a few of them, and
yeah.
So you know what, to be able to be a part of it and know the story about where it came from, I can pretty vividly picture where the conversation took place, and good people, you know, a lot of good people that care about the game,
yeah,
that are contributing to it, and people that aren't lacrosse people.
What does Willie B mean to the Mammoth? Because I know you guys have had some issues with him, and he's been suspended, he's been fired, he's been rehired, but he really has a huge persona as part of an NLL icon, in a sense.
Well, let the record show I never fired him.
Okay.
He quit once.
He quit once, okay.
He quit once, but I've never fired him. You know what, I love Willie personally. I think he's a wonderful person. And here's a guy that was given a VHS tape back in 2002, and they said, you know, what can you do with this? And he goes, he went home, watched it, popped the tape in, not knowing much, not thinking much, and then has come back, you know, and he's 10 years later into that relationship, and you know, he means the world to the franchise, mm-hmm. and you know, I think what people don't understand is the stuff that he does outside of the building.
Yeah.
And how much he talks about our product and how actually intelligent he is about the game, and you know, how much he understands, and you know, we bought him a ring in 2006 with the team, and he wears that proudly, and you know, he's been a huge part of the organization, and yes, he goes over the top. And sometimes we have to rein him in, and sometimes he's, you know, he says too much, or, you know, but I'd rather, like, how many times, Teddy, as a player, do you say, I'd rather be able to rein somebody in than try and get them to go out and do more?
Yeah.
You know, so sometimes we have to rein him in.
Were you worried if he was going to fight Bubba Durno that one night?
I thought, you know, it was fascinating how it was all coming down.
Yeah.
The two of them were... They were in the penalty box between a set of glass, and you know, I think the funny thing was the game entertainment director Steve Johnson was probably going to bear the brunt of the worst of it, because he was going to have to get in the middle of it. I don't think I know Bubba Durno is a tough kid, but I don't know that I'd want to get in Willie's way.
No, I wouldn't. That's a big man.
He's a big man. Not sure he's been in a lot of fights in his life, but
true. But you never, those car guys, they're weird dudes. They are weird dudes. As a general manager and a person who runs an organization, and you've been with Philadelphia, you've been with Washington, you've been now with Colorado for 10-plus years, so you've seen the highs and lows. When you're looking for a player to come into the organization, let's say a guy like Adam Jones, comes from a winning pedigree, has all the tools right away, do you try to get a guy that is going to be the best player available or the best player to fit the culture that you have built?
Well, that's an excellent question because I think it's a different answer every draft, depending on, you know, what you need and how desperate you are or what's going on. I mean, I go back to the 05 draft for the 06 season, and Gary Gate had just retired, and, you know, we had to say goodbye to an icon, and who was going to replace him? And along comes a young kid, Dan Carey, who kind of falls into our lap.
Yeah.
And amazingly enough, Bob Hanley does a really bad deal to draft Matt Brown, who I would have taken at the time. He was living in Denver, and, you know, and we take Dan Carey, and Dan Carey fit into the culture and, you know, was just such an amazing individual and a wonderful person for this franchise at that time that we needed a lefty offensive scorer, and he was one of the most pure scorers there was, but he was such a wonderful person that we got lucky, you know, and we kind of checked off two boxes on that one.
Yeah.
You know, you go back to an Adam Jones, and Adam Jones, again, needed a lefty offensive scorer, and lo and behold, here's a guy, another great character guy. I don't think people, and maybe they do, you know, they've seen this kid win for years, but I don't think people realize just how good he is, just how fun he is in the locker room, just how a big and important part of the culture of this organization he is. And you know, so sometimes you get lucky. You know, the NLL, because, you know, we don't have access to the players as much as we'd like, and it's not the NFL Combine.
Yeah.
Or, you know, sometimes you get lucky, and sometimes you get unlucky.
Yep.
And, you know, you try your best to understand culture. You try your best to understand, you know, the Rorschach test and you know, if these guys are willing and able to be the guys that you want them to be. But, you know, ultimately, sometimes it's a bit of a crapshoot. When they don't live here and you don't have access to them on a 24-hour basis and you're not really, you know, from a checkbook perspective, controlling their every move like you might in the NHL, and they're living in a cocoon, you know, you've got to have guys that are left to their own devices flying around the country representing your team. And sometimes they make bad decisions and sometimes they surprise you.
Yeah. What's been the best move you've made as a GM since coming to Colorado? Has it been the trade that brought Junior, or is it the trade that brought back Gavin Prout?
You know what? I think it was getting Paul Gate to come out of retirement. That's not true. No, I love Paul Gate, but that was not my best move ever. But it was a good idea at the time.
It was, yeah. You took a lot of heat for that, though.
It's going to be a good idea.
Yeah.
And that's part of, you know, you make the decisions with the information that you have at the time that you make them, you know. And sometimes you hit them out of the park and sometimes you don't.
Yeah.
You know what? I would tell you this. I think if you go back even farther than that, the single biggest move or deal that I made was signing Gavin Prout and G. Nash as free agents.
Yes, I mean, out of New York,
You know, that John Grant will go down in the annals of this franchise, and the Rochester franchise is a pretty significant player, obviously, in this league, and you know, that was a good move for us. You know, Matt Vince fell in our lap, and we turned around, and because of circumstances, had to turn that into a different player. And John Grant was that player, and I've been thrilled to be able to work with Junior. He's a great guy, and I love having him here. But I think if you go back and what really put us on the map and what was probably able to win us the 06 championship was having a goaltender here that, you know, in G. Nash and who, you know, is on our all-decade team. You know, I could go back to the signing of a guy like J.J. Albert.
That was going to be my next question, yeah.
You know, I mean, J.J. Albert, who I got to see about a week ago in Manhattan, is doing well and has his first child. And, you know, I've stayed in touch with these guys and Jamie Hanford and Dave Stilley and, you know, these guys that have been around. But, you know, There's a lot of great people on. And what's my single greatest move? You know, I don't know the answer.
Yeah.
I think the single greatest move for the National Lacrosse League and the Colorado Mammoth was actually facilitating the sale of the Washington Power to come to Denver.
Yeah. The J. Jal Bear story is a pretty cool story, because he was like, you know, what Paul Rabil sort of is now was what J. Jal Bear was. And he was sort of that new hybrid American. How good could he have been if it wasn't for concussions?
You know, he was good.
Yeah.
And
he had an edge to him.
What's that?
He had an edge to him. Like, remember when he hit Glenn Clark in the All-Star game?
In the All-Star game.
Yeah.
You know, and he just played at a speed in a gear that not a lot of guys could get to.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there wasn't a lot of people that could play at that level. You know, he played above a lot of people. And, again, it wasn't about stick skills. It wasn't about – I mean, he embodied – everything that you wanted to know about heart and desire and the things that I think matter in this game, you know, playing with passion, you know, he was the guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be forever in his debt because I got a chance to watch him play.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's a lot of people that I can say that about over the course of my career in this league, but he was certainly one of my favorite.
What's right about the National Lacrosse League right now?
It's a great product.
Yeah.
You know, it's a great product. And I think, I don't care, you know, who you are and you come to a game, you see it for the first time or you see it for the 100th time. And, you know, I read all sorts of people that have been around the game or think they know the game. It's better today than it ever was in the mill.
Yeah.
You know, when I played, and Teddy, when you played, I mean, the quality of these athletes, they're in great shape. The stick skills are amazing. The physicality is amazing. The goaltending is amazing. You know, these guys are really good.
Mm-hmm.
And I really wish that more people would come and watch them play.
Yeah. What's wrong with the National Lacrosse League?
We can't get enough people to come watch them play.
There you go.
I mean, that's the bottom line.
Yeah.
We need more people to enjoy the product with as much passion as I have or as much passion as you have or mm-hmm. any of these other owners and players that are sinking their hearts and minds and money into, you know, we need to get more people to watch the game. I think I have a lot of theories as to how you do that, but the bottom line is we need to create critical mass and
mm-hmm.
we need to take this game to the masses. And until we do that, that will be our biggest challenge.
You guys have had a lot of success in Colorado, and I'm sure there's going to be more to come. You guys are on a bit of an upswing now, and you got a huge, you know, few games left here in the regular season. What's it going to take for you guys to turn this thing around, climb out of the basement, and get yourself a playoff spot?
Yeah, you know, I think we're on the right track with a couple wins against Buffalo. You know, I think we're facing good teams down the stretch. You know, we got Philly this weekend. We've got Edmonton, who I think is playing fantastic lacrosse right now, and they're really exciting to watch and a good product. The more people up in Edmonton should go watch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're playing good lacrosse in the last four or five games, and I think Bob Hamley says it on every one of the coaches' calls that we're playing good lacrosse right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? We got to have the ball drop for us a couple more times, and we've got to have a couple more saves, and ultimately I think we'll get where we want to go, and I think we're a good team. I think we have good players. I think we've got guys that are dedicated to the cause, great coaches, and you know what? Ultimately, the chips are going to have to fall where they may, but sometimes you need a little luck.
A couple more questions here. Do you think the NLL will ever be back in your hometown?
Well, I think you and I have talked about this a number of times. Would I like to see them there? Yes. I would only like to see them there in the right financial situation with the right ownership group playing in a building that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm extremely supportive of seeing it back in Vancouver. I want to see it back there. I love to go back and visit when I get a chance. You know, and I think it deserves to be back there. The fans have to support it.
Yeah.
You know, we can't have the age-old lacrosse issue of lacrosse people with their hands out.
Yeah.
you know, looking for free tickets.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've got to sell to not only our lacrosse, you know, our local lacrosse people, but we also have to sell to other people that we have to get to buy into the game. So, you know, it's not just about giving away free tickets. It's about selling good tickets and having the right building arrangement, the right well-capitalized owner that's going to care about that team and put a great product on the field.
Finally, how scared were you when John Grant Jr. threw a ball at your head?
It was pretty funny, actually. I was never scared. I put a helmet on it, you know. Thinking, we talked about this whole it was going to be somebody else that did it, but nobody, you know, trusted him enough to do it. So they're all like, no, I'm not doing it. No, I'm not doing it. And so I was, I said, yeah, I'll do it. And sure enough, first throw. I mean, there's no second take in that. He threw one ball and rifled it right at my head. I didn't even flinch. The second one, we tried it again. I put it on my head, and I was the one that flinched and it fell off. He missed. So, yeah, the first time he threw it right there and knocked it right off. But you know what? The guy is amazingly accurate. I've watched him for so long do that. At no point in time did I ever think he was going to hit me.
Awesome. And there's no trick photography in any of that. That's all him doing his thing.
No, you know what? We've got this great series going on
with
us right now, and they're doing these trick shots. And he went out to a pretty popular Casa Bonita place and did that. And the next one, look for the next one because it's going to be a lot of fun. It's over at Coors Field.
Oh, nice. Because so, he just did Red Rocks, right?
He did Red Rocks. Yeah. That was pretty fun. I actually just got the bill for security for Red Rocks.
Really?
That they had to cordon off all the security so that all the runners and stuff were there weren't
going to
hit.
But
there's rules up there that you can't throw off the rocks.
Oh.
So a lot of the stuff they wanted to do was throwing off the rocks. The unfortunate thing is we're not letting them throw these long balls anymore, backhand or forehand, because he gets gassed and can't practice the next day. So now it's got to be the stuff from Casa Bonita where he's just being accurate.
Awesome.
So we're having some fun with that. I have a 1966 Mustang convertible, and John and I were talking today about how we're going to incorporate that into one of the next trick shots. We're going to drive around town, and he's going to hit stuff from the car. So we'll have some fun with that.
Awesome.
So this is, you know, we don't sit around thinking about wins and losses. We sit around thinking
the trick shots. I appreciate this. It's always a great catching up with you and chatting with you. You do an excellent job there, and the Mammoth are an organization that every other team should be modeled after, and congratulations on all your success and future success coming up in the years to come. Steve, I appreciate you taking the time.
Well, Teddy, thank you very much, and all the best to your listeners, and I'm sure I will hear all the repercussions about my interview in the next couple days.
Steve Govett, old Govey, one of my favorite guys in all of lacrosse. Great chatting with him. Always good to catch up. And make sure you check out those John Grant Jr. videos. They are some pretty funny ones. If you know John Grant Jr., you can get his humor. And when the very first one where he puts the old Pepsi Center hole in one, throws the ball right through the referee's hole, the penalty box, and then chucks his stick over the glass and is clapping his hands, then realizes that he threw it over and his reaction, that's pure Jr., just straight comedy. I want to thank Steve for talking to us this week. Kept a little longer than normal. I want to thank you for listening to another edition of the Off the Crossbar podcast. Next week, we go to Minnesota. John Arlotta, the general manager of the Minnesota Swarm, will join us right here on the Off the Crossbar podcast. And until then, enjoy the games and be excellent to each other.